This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Not everyone is careful with your personal information, which might explain why there's a victim of identity theft every 5 seconds in the U.S. Fortunately, there's LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year by visiting LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Rabbit Hole Recap, recording at an odd day, Friday, because of the holiday season here. I was just home for Christmas with the fam. Matt, how was your Christmas? Was it a good one?
Merry fucking Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
I love this holiday. It's a great holiday.
I do too. Though, when it falls on like a Tuesday, I always get so out of whack, forgetting what day of the week it is.
It is really weird, especially like work-wise, like go in the next day, do you not?
Yeah, it's really...
Is someone really going to email me at that time?
Probably not. Yeah. Really, it really dampers productivity.
Markets were open.
Very volatile week in the traditional financial markets. We don't even have that on the list, but...
Well, I have the government shutdown on the list.
Yeah, that's on the list. We'll get to it. So we'll get to that. Yeah, it's been a long week. I'm actually happy that we're recording right now because I feel like it's giving me a sense of structure back in my life, getting some content out there. So I'm very excited for this episode in particular. And before we get into everything, this episode is brought to you by BlockFi. A lot of people are forced to sell their crypto to pay their capital gains taxes. Don't be one of those people. BlockFi helps Bitcoin, Ether, and Litecoin investors use their crypto to pay for things like tax burdens without having to sell their crypto. By leveraging your crypto, BlockFi will send U.S. dollars directly to your bank account in as few as 90 minutes, in an hour and a half. To top it off, the interest you pay on a BlockFi loan can also be written off on your taxes. Let me repeat that. The interest you pay on the BlockFi loan can also be written off on your taxes, reducing your overall tax burden. Visit BlockFi.com/TalesFromTheCrypt to learn more about putting your crypto to work without having to sell. BlockFi.com/TalesFromTheCrypt. And they also have a special deal for you freaks out there, $25, a crypto collateral added to a loan under $10,000. And if you take out a loan over $10,000, they'll add $50 in crypto collateral. Shout out BlockFi. Matt, it's been 10 days since we last recorded. A lot is going on. Let's start with the hot topic in the streets right now, which is the presentations that went down at the, I forget exactly what conference it was, but it was a conference basically where people try to come.
I want
to
say C43C, right?
It's 3-5. It's the 35th annual of this conference. The hashtag digits? Is like, let me pull it up real quick. Yeah, the hashtag's 35C3. So at this event, basically hackers congregate and try to hack shit. And there was a lengthy presentation on a group called wallet.fail is the website. You can go check them out there.
Really catchy domain.
Very catchy domain. Wallet.fail. And they basically presented a bunch of hardware.
Four demonstrations.
Yes.
Of Ledger and Trezor hacks.
Yes. Pretty startling to see.
I think theoretically, like, these types of attacks are, you know, you should assume that they all require physical access, and you should assume your hardware.
One did not require physical access.
Well, kind of.
Yeah.
Because the one. Okay, so let's go through the four of them.
Yeah. So there's four. Well,
the first one is.
I think we should describe the four types of attacks, which is supply chain attacks, firmware attacks, chip level attacks, and then side channel attacks are the four vectors.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the first one is, the idea was you intercept, they demonstrated this one on a Ledger, but you could probably do something similar on a Trezor relatively easily, is they intercepted the Ledger ahead of time. They installed something that basically simulates the button push, the confirm button. Mm-hmm. And the reasoning there is, the whole reason the confirm button exists is because if, like, the software on your computer is compromised, the user is looking at the display and has to actually press the button with their finger to confirm the transaction, right? It's one of the main fail-safes.
Yeah, your hardware device technically signs the transaction. You have to hit confirm, right, which sends a message to your computer.
So even if the software is compromised, the button still needs to be physically pressed, which should protect you. If you read on the screen, you're like, oh, that's not to the address I thought it was going to. Mm-hmm. You don't press the button. So they installed like a remotely activated button that they could remotely click the button. So it would need to be in they would have to give you malicious software, feed you like the malicious address or whatever, and then that last step where you would confirm it, they could confirm it by if they're nearby and they could press like the button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was one. And was that part of the supply chain attack or just
yeah,
somebody...
that's the supply chain attack.
Okay.
So because the idea is they're intercepting it before you get it.
Well, no, because they did this with Trezor too, where they showed how the dude you well, the other thing with the supply chain attacks in particular that you have to be wary of is the stickers, the protective stickers.
The stickers that, don't really do anything.
Yeah, that they put on the packaging. People have been known to use like hair dryers to get the stickers off and replace them with another one. In between doing that, opening up the device and adding a similar hack that we just described or something like it.
Right, they literally added like an antenna inside the device
yeah.
to receive the button press.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you have to. You should inspect these devices. You should order them directly from the vendor. Of course, they can still be intercepted in the mail. Like, especially if you're like a known Bitcoin person, if you're a target. Mm-hmm. Like, this is supply chain attacks are particularly more likely from like a government because they can get into the mail easily, right? Because it's not easy for everyone to intercept your mail, but it's pretty easy for the government to intercept your mail. I mean, the best case scenario is if there was a place to buy these hardware wallets with cash near you, and then you could just buy it in person and be a little
ideally, you'll be able to just go to the factory, watch them get made, and buy it
yeah,
right there.
Yeah, right. So actually, all of these attacks, if you have a passphrase that's strong, they wouldn't be able to get any funds. They would still have to brute force your passphrase. That yes. added So everyone should always add a passphrase. And you should operate under the assumption that if try and make it so it's as difficult as possible for someone to actually get physical access to your device to hold it. Okay, so the big attack was
the bootloader.
Supply chain attack, then they played Snake on the ledger.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically they were showing that they could load an unauthorized bootloader onto it, which Ledger has said in the past that you can't do. And both Ledger and Trezor have since released statements that updates will fix this in January.
Yeah. And then, actually, let's talk about their statements. Ledger came out pretty ardently, like, against these presentations. And
maybe we should go over the
let's keep going.
Let's go over the four. So then the third one was the Ledger Blue, which was the short-lived Ledger device. That was supposed to have Bluetooth. It's the one with the screen, the big touch screen on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they never enabled the Bluetooth, and they just scrapped the whole wallet. I don't even think you can buy it anymore.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
But this one, they were able to sniff with an RF sniffer, radio frequencies. They were able to sniff the pin presses. So this is the one you said, oh, you don't need physical access to it because mm-hmm. they could sniff the pin presses. But then they would still need to then...
Get
the device to put the pin in.
Yes.
So you'd still need physical access in that case. But they could see the way the display lit up the buttons when you pressed it. That's what they were detecting.
Mm-hmm. But I thought they also did something where they like remotely didn't touch it and sign a transaction.
No, that's the one where they put the button inside of where the supply chain attack, where they received it ahead of time. They put a little RF button inside of it with an antenna, and then they could press the button with the antenna.
Okay. That's what I was
saying. You'd have to be like in the hotel room next door or something.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like it's like an advanced, you know, it's a sophisticated attack.
Yes.
This is not something that you could pull off on like a grand scale.
Exactly.
And then the last one was the Trezor. They figured out a way to, when the Trezor is updating, they could glitch it out, and this is the worst one out of all of them. They could glitch it out, and it releases the seed and the pin.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really matter that it gives you the pin, because if you have the seed, you're good to go anyway. And then you can just steal all the funds that way. And that's basically, they created like a little device that you take a ledger in, you plug it into the device, it like tricks it into thinking it's upgrading, and can extract the seed.
Okay.
Now, that's why the passphrase is important, because at this point, if... A passphrase is basically the 25th word of the seed. You know, you have 24 words for your secret words. the passphrase is a 25th word. So even though they have those 24 words, if you have a really strong passphrase, they still can't get your funds.
Mm-hmm.
And as we said before, Treasure said they're going to release an update for that.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, and then, so talking about their statements, Trezor seemed a bit pissed because these guys did not disclose these. They found out about these hacks via the presentation, like live.
Right, live, yeah.
Which, yeah, it's pretty shitty. I think the hacker should have reached out to Trezor in good faith, right? Is that the right thing to do?
Responsible disclosure is, like, kind of difficult in these situations.
Yeah,
So I don't want to really, like, comment without knowing the full, you know, it's a he said, she said kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that this was a situation where it's, like, a mass exploitable zero day.
Yeah.
No one's emptying all the Trezor and Ledger wallets anywhere. You know, they even all the Ledger attacks, they were never able to pull a seed from any of the Ledger devices.
Mm-hmm.
The Trezors, you're protected from a passphrase. They need to get physical access to the device. People have warned us for ages, you know, don't, if someone like a state actor or someone who's sophisticated is with your Trezor by themselves trying to break into your Trezor, they can probably get your seed out. Like, that's what you should assume can happen anyway.
Yeah, these are very elaborate.
So, like, if it was, like, some kind of zero day where, like, they could dump every blockchain.info wallet because it's online, right, or something, mm-hmm. and just steal a shit ton of money because it wasn't responsibly disclosed, I would say then that'd be a lot worse, right?
Yeah, totally.
And it was nice how thorough they were, and they demoed everything, and they had stuff on video.
Yeah, and these guys
and they open sourced a lot of the code.
Yeah, and these guys had to make very specific hardware and firmware to make these attacks possible. It was like very hard work on their part. Like like you said, to think that they'd be able to do this in mass is very highly unlikely.
One of the guys they worked with was Salim.
The 15-year-old.
So he had already broke. Remember, he broke into a Trezor a year ago or 2 years ago.
Probably a year ago. Yeah.
For someone who needed to, that was one of my first thoughts too. I was like, you know, there's like a couple lucky fucks that are like they haven't been able to get into the Trezor for like the last 8 months, but they still have it, and they're like, oh, finally, I can extract the seed. So you know, there's a bright side to that side of the
story. Yeah, silver lining to this.
And if you ever like get locked out of your Trezor and you don't have your backup anymore, you should just hold on to it for a year or two and wait to see if there's a vulnerability.
Yeah. Yeah. So just, again, keep your Trezor and Ledger, your hardware wallets, safe and in a safe spot that nobody else knows about. And you should be
good. Passphrases.
Passphrases as well.
If you don't have a passphrase on your wallet, it might be worth it to, you know, move your funds, create a new one, and then move them back. I like for cold storage, you should use multiple methods to store your Bitcoin. Don't store them all on a Ledger. Don't store them all on a Trezor. You know, you use different methods. You have a good cold storage method that I like is pretty easy is if you use Tails. Tails is a Linux distribution that you can boot up onto any computer using a USB stick. And it has Electrum built into it, so you can use Tails either with a Trezor directly in Electrum, or you can create an Electrum wallet in Tails offline, just write down that seed on a piece of paper, and then you have a pretty good cold storage wallet that's never touched the internet, because Tails isn't on the internet, and then when you pull the USB drive, it erases everything from the computer.
That's pretty sweet.
And if you want to access it again, you just plug it back in, relaunch Tails, and then you put your seed words into Electrum, and you're good to go.
Yeah, so
that's a good segue about Electrum.
Yeah, good segue about Electrum. So those attacks that we just described are elaborate and, well, a little scary. They're probably highly unlikely unless somebody gets access to your device, or impossible unless somebody gets access to your device.
Another thing to remind people of here is, like, this is a perfect example of why it's important not to tell people you own Bitcoin, or, like, as few people as possible. Because if they don't know you have Bitcoin, they're not looking for your Trezor to begin with.
Yeah, Matt and I don't own any Bitcoin.
Yeah. I don't even know what Bitcoin is, actually.
Yeah. Is it 22 million of them? No, but those attacks, while elaborate, highly unlikely, more likely attack, and an attack that has been exploited very vigorously here in the last few weeks, is Electrum. Users of Electrum Wallet are are trying to send transactions and seeing an error screen pop up, which tells them that they're on the wrong version of Electrum and they need to download a new one. It then sends them to a GitHub account where they can download the software, and then it's malware. So they download
it's a fake GitHub. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fake GitHub. It's a malware that they download, and they're basically sending Bitcoin straight to an attacker.
Then the attacker just sweeps the wallet.
Yeah.
And takes all the coins.
Yeah, so this is a social, combination of a social and it's a phishing attack, basically.
I mean, I would say that this is, Electrum shouldn't allow, and they're rushing out a fix now. There's not a fix yet. They blocked the actual GitHub page that was serving the malicious content, but the same hackers or a different group could just create another page and serve the same pop-up. And the issue is that Electrum uses, anyone can run an Electrum server, and Electrum by default picks a random server. You can use your own server, then you're immune from these attacks. But
how hard is it to run your own server? What's the process?
It's pretty easy. It's called Electrum Personal Server. They have a separate client for it. You need to have a full node, though, a Bitcoin full node. That's the hard part.
Yeah.
Which has become easier and easier. But so what the hackers are doing here is they're running a malicious Electrum server. The user is opening up their Electrum. Their client is randomly connecting to one of the malicious servers. And then the malicious server is able to send this pop-up dialogue with the link to update and everything. That should just not be allowed. That's an issue on Electrum's side that is going to be patched up that shouldn't have been a hole to begin with.
Should have like push notifications to update. You should have to update manually.
Or at least don't allow the Electrum servers to push anything. Mm-hmm. Because anyone can run an Electrum server, so they shouldn't be able to push, you know, messages to the
user. It's a big
it like looks like a legit dialogue box that like pops up. Like that should just not be possible.
Yeah, and I think how many Bitcoin got taken?
A lot.
700? No. $700,000 worth.
It's like 200K Bitcoin, right?
$700,000 worth of Bitcoin.
200K
Bitcoin. 200 Bitcoin.
Oh, 200.
200K Bitcoin.
I don't know. Bad math. Oh, fuck you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too.
Oh, that's way better. Only 200 Bitcoin?
Yeah, only 200 Bitcoin, $700,000.
That's not
worth.
It's way less worse than I thought it was.
That's a material amount.
Yeah, don't blindly click updates, people. Like when your money's on the line.
Yeah, well, and it also highlights the fact, like, staying on the topic of attacks, like phishing attacks, like you're most likely to get socially engineered into these attacks and like physically attacked. So just be wary of every link you click, like every website you go to. Make sure you're going to official websites, especially with wallets, just manually type them in. Don't even trust like a Google link or anything like that.
Yeah, and you want to confirm the hash and signature on the web page.
Yes, you can do that as well.
GitHub's nice because on GitHub they like build it in, so it says like this link has been signed by the creator of the GitHub.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just be wary. Just adversarial. Just be paranoid at all times.
I mean, then after all this is said and done, someone can just hit you with a $5 wrench attack. Anyway,
that as well. So those are big attack news this week.
Oh, and then the other thing with Electrum is that you could actually do a multi-sig. We were talking about this the other episode. You could do a multi-sig wallet where one key is Electrum, one key is Ledger, and one key is Trezor. So then all three devices would have to be compromised, or two of the devices would have to be compromised to take your money.
Yeah.
Just, you know, use different methods. Be creative how you store your seed, you know, everything. You just be creative and compartmentalize that shit.
Well, to be a bit of a hard ass here, it is hard. Like this, never. Do you think this is going to sell socially to the masses?
I think being your bank is always going to be difficult.
Yes,
you're being your own bank, right?
No, that's what I said on Peter's podcast.
It's an unsolvable problem.
Yeah,
but it's getting easier, and it will continue to get.
And it is a worthwhile endeavor, I would argue. And like you said, it is getting easier. I believe it will get considerably easier in the future.
But it will always come with anxiety. It'll always come with pressure and stuff. Why? Because like you're the one who's responsible for it. Mm-hmm. It's responsibility.
Yeah,
and you can't solve responsibility. That's just what it is.
Yeah. So definitely spread out your responsibility. And
yeah, I mean, for some people, like, look, I fucking despise custodial solutions, right? But for some people, you know, you have 20% with Zappo or someone who's doing custody for you. Like, that might make sense for your particular situation. At least then, you know, you fuck everything up. Then you only lost 80% of your money, 20% of it's safe. And if they fuck you, you still have 80% of your money. So work that all into your balance.
Yeah. No, it's important. Important things to think through as we endeavor deeper and deeper into this weird rabbit hole that we find ourselves in. Let's get some good news here. New Jewel version out, and Pierre's node launcher has been iterating at lightning speed.
Dude, his node launcher is way easier to use now than before. It's just he's polishing it off. He's got guides out. Like, you have no excuse. Just if you're bored this weekend, or even if you're not bored, go and launch a Bitcoin full node and a Lightning node on your computer.
Pierre's so busy building out the iterations of this node launcher that he has no time to respond to haters on Twitter, which is
this
is good to see.
He literally was just like, fuck it, I'm doing this, guys. We're getting at as many people on Lightning as possible. It's the most badass thing. I fucking love it. The new Jewel version, which is cool, is it's in the fucking app stores now.
Yeah, it's in the app stores and Google Play. You can get it on Firefox. Official extension.
So now you have really no excuse. It's super easy to set up. You just install the Jewel extension. You run his node launcher. I don't think the Casa node is compatible with Jewel yet.
I think they have to figure out something with the macaroons.
Yeah, the naming is so weird. Yeah, but they're talking with each other. They're gonna make it happen.
Yeah.
Shout out! We got a Noddle coming. I'm excited about. We should get it in the next week.
Oh yeah. Always shouting out to Noddle. They're iterating at lightning speed as well.
Yeah. So we'll discuss that on the next episode. But just that I thought that was really exciting. Jewel, the Lightning Network keeps growing. Capacity keeps growing. A lot of good news on that front.
Yeah. And it's again, to stay on this topic for a bit, it's crazy how fast it's all happening. It feels like there's been a tipping point.
Well, you really see like the beauty of the whole layered scaling idea finally coming to fruition, because we have like a whole set of developers that are like, we're doing it live. Like, we're just going balls to the wall. Everything's getting going really quickly, and that's Lightning, right? And they're just trying all these different things, seeing what works. And then you have layer one development, which is always slow and conservative. It's like two completely different yet like complementary paths.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful to see. And did we talk? So speaking of protocol level development, did we talk about the first Schnorr proposal? I think we did. Did we talk about that last week?
Yeah, we did, because we were talking about it at BitDevs too.
Yeah. So it's innovation at the protocol and second layer. It's heating up. It's great to see. And I was talking about that with Peter. Like, this year, fundamentally, is the best position Bitcoin's ever been in. And I think it's a product of the fact that we had such a long scaling debate and we finally can move on from that debate.
It's crazy when you think about it. Like, Bitcoin had no business being at $20,000 last year.
Yeah.
Like, compared to this year. Last year, the fundamentals were fucking crap, right? Yeah. You had Bitmain was like this scary behemoth. You had Bitcoin Cash that just got a ninja launch on Coinbase. You know, no one really knew what the fuck was going on. We had just finally got CME and CBOE. Like, it was completely... Lightning Network was just a nascent... It wasn't even like publicly launched, right? Like, the whole Reckless thing was like in January or something.
Yeah, and the network couldn't handle the stress. Like,
right, exchanges were crashing left and right.
Yeah, blocks were slow, fees were high.
Wow, fees are so high.
Yeah. I think fundamentally, like, so we have SegWit adoption rising at a steady pace. Lightning's growing exponentially. And so this allows us for the next bull run to be more efficient. Hopefully, the base layer is more efficient and the fee...
We have Cash App, we have Robinhood, which... It's custodial, but...
I don't know. I don't want to throw Robinhood in there. I don't know.
I think Robinhood is... People don't... Like, for our age group, like, Robinhood is basically an ETF for them. They weren't going to have custody if they trade an ETF either.
That's true.
They open up their stock app, and they click the Bitcoin button, and they can buy it. They don't have to worry about storing it. They don't have to worry about anything else. Like, I would never use it. But I think it's going to be a major, major Like, if they're not playing funny business, it'll be a major, major so-called on-ramp for exposure.
Yeah. No. Yeah, so fundamentally, I think as we round out 2018 here, never been better. It's only getting better, more promising. And hopefully we can get as efficient as possible before the next bull run. And it'll be very interesting to see how, in particular, the fees sort of react to more stress on the network, given that Segwit's a thing.
Lightning.
More
better fee estimators.
Better fee estimators, better practices with batching at exchanges and stuff like that.
People are more informed.
Yes.
Wallets handle everything better.
Yeah. So it'll hopefully the next stress test, Bitcoin does a little bit better. We'll see. Switching to geopolitical and Bitcoin, India. Notoriously bad vibes towards Bitcoin. It seems they may be loosening those bad vibes. Some good, like, Bob Marley vibes are coming into India, and they're thinking about loosening the regulations. I think it came out, there's been some government entity came out and said they've had multiple conversations and definitely want to be more accommodative going forward.
Yeah, it's like the lamest great news ever, right?
Yeah.
They're like, we're not going to outright ban it. That would just be idiotic.
Yeah.
We're just going to heavily regulate it and make it a little bit easier for these banks and stuff to work with.
Yeah. And then you have this, I don't know if this is on the list, but then you had like the Fed come out and say that government-run cryptocurrencies make no sense. And I think they called out Ripple too.
But wasn't that like a little bit old?
I don't know.
I thought that was like a little bit older. It was like an older post that was like circulating.
I think
you're
thinking of the Philly Fed paper that came out earlier this year, where the economists at the Philly Fed in particular wrote something on cryptocurrency, and they said something in a similar vein. But I think this was
right. I know that one existed too, but yeah. I thought this one was also not recently. But either way, yeah, they get it.
Yeah,
they were like, well, the whole point is censorship resistance. So if we control it, then it has no point.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's out there. Our boy Rhett Crayton, his spot got blown up this week.
He's
not our boy.
I hate that phrase. You always use the phrase. BTCP, Bitcoin Private, much hyped.
Much
shitcoin.
Shilled. I want to say hype. It was shilled pretty hard
on Twitter. Was shilled so hard.
Yeah.
So what they did was they took Z Classic,
which was a fork of Zcash,
which was a kind of a fork with Zcash. It was Zcash without the. It was a brand new UTXO set, so it had no founder's reward or anything. So it was like a fork, as in Litecoin is a fork to Bitcoin,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Brand new UTXO set. Come out with Z Classic. They pump Z Classic for a bit. Everything's going to shit. It's really just a shit coin with no real usage or anything. So they presumably buy up a bunch of Z Classic for really cheap. And then after they do that, they announce Bitcoin Private, which is going to, they're going to take Z Classic and they're going to fork Z Classic. They're going to airdrop, they're going to fork Z Classic, rename it to Bitcoin Private, and then airdrop a shit ton of Bitcoin Private to current Bitcoin holders and pretend it's like some kind of merge fork, even though it's really just another altcoin fork with an airdrop. And the price just fucking pumped through the roof of Z Classic. And it tanked, and then it tanked before Bitcoin Private, like, really, it is all tanked together. The best time to sell it was like right before the fork happened. And I personally think, like, there's no hard proof about any of this, but I personally think that Rhett and his team, they all sold their Z Classic before the fork even happened, right at the top. Because then after Bitcoin Private came out, it was like basically just a dead coin.
Yeah, and to add salt on the wound of that pump and dump, apparently when they did fork to Bitcoin Private, they had a secret $2 million Bitcoin Private pre-mine.
Right, they added more coins to the supply secretly.
Yes, which is very...
2 million more of them.
Which I would argue is very unethical.
And Rhett is like pretending he had nothing to do with it, and they're all like blaming some anonymous contributor, which is really convenient.
And he reviewed the code. I mean, somebody basically found the GitHub repository.
But the guy who put it in was approved on GitHub by Rhett.
Yes. He blocked me because I called him a scumbag.
He blocked me and unblocked me.
He unblocked you.
Well, because he blocked me. Like, I have this great thread where I'm just like, don't buy Z Classic. It's all bullshit, blah, blah, blah. And he blocked me because of that. That was like 8 months ago or whenever all this shit was going on. A lot of people shilled that shit.
Yeah.
It's just another case. So Coinmetrics broke the story. We have the, we're going to put the link in the show notes. It's a really interesting read. Really great work by them.
Shout out Coinmetrics. Incredible blockchain analysis company.
Yeah, there's one of the best sites. It's like a key tool in my
incredibly
toolbox.
Ethical blockchain analysis company too.
Completely free.
Yeah.
Very powerful. But yeah, I mean, I can't say that any of us are really surprised. Like, this thing was already super scammy. Like, I don't like to use that word because I think it reduces its effectiveness. But this was a scam. Like, this was,
well,
that's what it was.
Let's use this as an example of caution for the future. Use this as a heuristic. Like, if people are shilling something as hard as they were Z Classic and Bitcoin Private, just take that as like a sign of caution. Like, maybe these people have perverse incentives, which in the long run, it turned out they did. The pre-mine is an overt perverse incentive.
Yeah, I mean, it's so weird because they literally could have had as much of the supply as they wanted the way they designed it. That they were using like Z Classic as this vessel into Bitcoin Private. Like, they could have gotten unlimited Z Classic basically at like nothing, negligible prices, because it was worthless before they announced the. It was just like automatic money. So, like, why even go through that extra
hurdle or that extra scam? Nah.
But yeah, don't trust Verify.
Yeah, and don't trust RecCreighton anymore. He's a serial scammer. Speaking of scammers, we got Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, and the Bitcoin Private team has acknowledged that this pre-mine exists. They confirmed the findings, and they said that they are going to... So the coins got moved to the shielded pool, which is because it's a Zcash fork, right? You have the shielded addresses and the non-shielded addresses. But they don't know... Because it's a shielded pool, they don't know which coins are the illegitimate coins and which ones aren't. So they're just removing they're going to fork out the whole shielded pool together. So it like forks out like 20,000, 30,000 legitimate coins along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is interesting. But
it's a
not.
Shit
it doesn't
show.
Matter.
Don't even like, it's all.
But the important part was that they acknowledged that it does exist. So you have confirmation. No one's arguing that this pre-mine didn't exist.
It's all pageantry at this point.
I agree. Okay, we can move on.
Yeah.
Thanks, Marty.
Yeah. And moving on to more pageantry, Facebook, they're coming out with a... I don't know if it's a stablecoin. People assumed it was a stablecoin. I think they just said they're adding...
Bloomberg said it was a stablecoin.
But I think it's one of those things where they
Oh, I mean, it's not... Yeah, who the hell knows? It's all speculation now anyway. But I think a stablecoin makes the most sense for them to begin with. Because it's cleaner from like a regulatory... Like, if you can't have... Facebook can't have like a free-floating token getting pumped and dumped.
Yeah, no.
I think it's way cleaner for them to just, you know, issue some boring-ass stablecoin... And integrated across their line of products, that's like exactly the same as like Gemini, USG or whatever they call it, USDG, GUSD.
Good or bad for Bitcoin and cryptocurrency? Do you think?
You know, I think it's complementary. Like, mm-hmm. I think if it's open, if you're actually, you know, able to like trade, if it's on like an actual public blockchain or something, like a Stellar token, I think it's going to be on Stellar, is my guess, but. If it's not, because Ethereum just can't handle it. But if it's on like a public blockchain, you can trade it for stuff, then it probably makes access to Bitcoin easier. It's obviously not censorship resistant. So it doesn't actually compete with Bitcoin. But like, it might make it way easier to buy Bitcoin and sell Bitcoin.
Well, that, and then like, do you think it's sort of a first entry for a lot of new users who sort of get comfortable with the Facebook coin and they're like, all right, I'm ready to move on to Bitcoin. You think it'd be something like that?
Except that they're going to probably...
You think they would prefer the Facebook coin to Bitcoin in the long run?
No, I think Facebook it's in their nature to, you know, hide the nuts and bolts. So I'm not sure, like, people will see, you know, like, a real open kind of
product.
Yeah, like, do you think they're going to have, like, you send to an address, or do you think you're sending to names?
I have no
idea.
Like,
stuff like that, right? Yeah. Maybe they'll have an advance. I think what would be really interesting, and I would really not like them to do this, but it'd be really good for them, is if they rolled out a Bitcoin, if they rolled out a Bitcoin wallet, and maybe, you know, some of the other top, some of the top altcoins, like a Bitcoin Ethereum wallet, maybe just keep those two. They could instantly become one of the major wallet providers between WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, and they have all this information on people. So they'd be like the number one chain analytics, chain analysis company, right? Like, they could track transactions like crazy, and it'd be so easy for them to monetize that. And then they could just throw their stable coin in that wallet with the other two. That would be the smart move. I really hope they don't do that.
That would be a scary, scary future. That's a very good point. The biggest chain analysis company right off the bat, if they want it to be.
They'd be the biggest wallet and the biggest chain analysis. They have so much information on people.
Yeah. I deactivated my Facebook.
Oh, yeah, mine's deleted.
Haven't been on it in a while. So, yeah, that's
hopefully,
coming out.
Hopefully Jack can beat them and integrate Lightning into Cash App and then Cash App into Twitter.
Yeah, when is Facebook dropping this?
No one knows. They say in 2019 on the article, right? But no one knows. They might never drop it.
Yeah, we'll see. They're working on it. Or at least it's reported that they are. Government shutdown. Back to politics here in the U.S. The government is shut down. We can't decide what to do with this goddamn wall. You put this on the list. Is there anything in particular?
Do you want to talk about it?
I mean,
do you have any comments?
I haven't really been paying attention too much.
The market has been kind of
very volatile.
Yeah,
I think we had the biggest one day advance in the Dow, about 1,000 plus point day in the Dow on Wednesday, I believe.
It was definitely the highest in a while, right? Was it ever?
It was the highest ever, I'm pretty sure.
After, you know,
after
we've
a precipitous
falling.
Decline before, so very volatile. I feel bad for the fund managers that after Monday's session went net short and then got immediately margin called on Wednesday.
Yeah, it kind of felt kind of crypto-y, right?
Yeah, it did.
Meanwhile, they're like freaking out about like 2% moves, 3% moves, right? Like, oh, wow.
But the government shutdown, like what has...
Like 6 days, 7 days now, something like that?
Yeah, like how long is this expected to go on?
Until Trump gets his wall is the plan.
Yeah, but like how long is like are people predicting that will last?
I don't know. I think we had one, didn't we? Didn't we have a government shutdown?
Yeah, like in 2012, I think.
The opposite way, right? Yeah, but I don't think that one lasted that long. I don't know. Anyway, and the whole time Trump is threatening to fire, which I don't even think he can.
He's threatening Powell. He's calling out Chairman Powell.
Or at least take him away from being the chairman.
We talked about this. We discussed this. I think he's trying to create a public fervor to sort of force a resignation. I think that's the only way you can get him out of office.
I feel like there's like a little narrative forming here,
mm-hmm.
where like Bitcoin has been falling a lot, if you haven't noticed, in the last year. But it's starting to
stabilize.
We've seen some big up days the last couple of days. And it could either be, you know, like a dead cat bounce, or there could be like some narrative here that, you know, why am I trusting these people with my money? They can't even keep their own house in order. And, you know, Bitcoin is $16,000 cheaper than it was last year. I might be better off buying the Bitcoin.
That is a narrative. I'm not sure if that's what's driving price, but I said this on what Bitcoin did too. Like, I think 2019 will be the year where we figure out if Bitcoin plays into the macro scenario at all, whether it does or doesn't. It'll be a very trying year. I mean, things are very frothy right now in the geopolitical landscape. So hopefully it would be sweet to see Bitcoin as like a sort of separate asset that people see as a quasi safe haven.
I mean, it'll be the first global financial crisis where Bitcoin exists, right?
Yeah. So we shall see. Hopefully it's ready for it. I think things are getting better, as we discussed earlier. We'll see, though. It definitely has shown some very strong stability the last 2 weeks in particular, as the stock markets around the world have sort of puked.
Didn't dump.
Yeah.
That's a positive.
Yeah. Civil, what is Civil? Civil relaunch?
Civil is like the horrible journalism ICO was a miserable failure, and like all the like mea culpas and stuff were getting released afterwards, where everyone's like, how could we have known? Everything went bad. No one got paid. I got robbed of my time and my money, and the contract was bullshit. You remember reading all that?
Yeah.
They're relaunching.
What?
With the new ICO.
Oh, my God.
They haven't learned a fucking thing. They're like, oh, the model was wrong. We're going to relaunch. So I just thought that was...
The gall of that team.
And, like, they don't get bad press because it's all journalists. Like, the whole idea is that it's supposed to be journalist-owned and, like, change the journalist business model. So they got good press again.
Right. Ridiculous. It's, all right.
Anyway, don't buy that ICO.
There's scammers everywhere. That was a topic on Twitter yesterday. People don't like things getting called scams. You know what? I don't give a shit.
Well, Yeah, but I mean, this is definitely... I don't know if this is a scam as much as they're just fucking idiots, but yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and then segueing to a hot thread today, Tur Demeester has toured a force, a magnum opus of a thread detailing Ethereum's history and the reasons why he's bearish and sort of skeptical of their long-term plans and the viability of their roadmap in particular. We'll obviously add the link in the show notes. Highly recommend you check it out. Obviously, this is something I've been talking about for a while. I have a thread of my own that's been documenting their quarrels throughout the last year and a half in their transition to proof of stake. I think Tor did a really good job of laying out the sort of inconsistency of the view and the moving goalpost. And if you freaks are listening out there and are heavily invested in Ethereum in particular, I highly recommend you check it out because he makes some very valid points. And it's something I agree with, even though I have friends who are very bullish on Ethereum and I love them. I just do not see the long-term viability of this project.
I have friends that use Ethereum. That's pretty funny.
They build on it.
No, it's like, I'm not a racist. I have a black friend. That was what I immediately thought of.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, I immediately thought of you when I read that thread because he talks a lot about the proof of stake and how it's just constant delays. And is it ever actually going to happen? And that's what your thread is about.
Yeah.
I think that there's this weird idea in this space that if you don't think Ethereum is valued properly, if you think Ethereum's overvalued, that it's a flawed project, that means you think every project is flawed. And it all started with the Bitcoin maximalism meme that Vitalik created, and which basically just dismisses any critic of Ethereum and says, well, you just don't like Ethereum because you only like Bitcoin because it's not Bitcoin. And that doesn't make any sense to me. Like people should be able to objectively, you know, state their opinions of these different projects, Ethereum included.
Yeah, and Tor and, to take it further myself, we're only using empirical data. Like we're looking at the things that have happened in the past and the promises that are coming in the future and just saying there's basically what you've delivered up to this point. I don't know if you're going to be able to, it seems as though their dreams are getting grander, to think that they're going to be able to successfully do that based off their historical performance. I just don't see it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I'm not very optimistic about Ethereum's future, with the caveat that I've never been optimistic about Ethereum's future, and it went to $1,500, all this other shit happened while I, you know, didn't think it was going to go anywhere. So But yeah, and I don't think you can just dismiss our criticisms just because we think a different project is better. Like, that, it makes sense that we would think a different project is much better. There's so many things that are wrong with Ethereum that just created like a precedent, yeah, in the space, like the whole ICOs, and then they like set up it as quickly as possible so like the tokens were all be really easily like the main use case, and they put their advisorships all over all the different ones, and the sketchiness around the pre-mine and the way the ICO initial distribution was, just all of this shit. And the DAO, obviously.
Yeah, they opened up Pandora's box to like all the shady shit.
Yeah.
Not shady shit, but just like, yeah, shady shit. There was a lot of shady shit that the Ethereum platform enabled last year. I mean, Bitcoin enables shady shit too.
I just think that like we're in the middle of a bear market. Everyone's being like way super salty, and like we should tone back the salt a little bit. Like, you don't need to. I love Tur. I agree with like the majority of his points, but like you don't need a 50 tweet thread about why you think Ethereum is a failed project. We've been talking about this for years, you know, and it's just. You're just trying. People are just going at each other, and I prefer to go at each other during the bull markets, you know, because then there's less. It doesn't feel as dirty. You know, like
all
there's
fair,
people that like lost.
All is fair in love and blockchains. All right.
I mean, I guess so. I personally think that we, you know, be a little bit less salty.
I agree. Less salt, the better. We should be more optimistic. More.
Yeah. I mean, look, if we think Bitcoin is going to be the base of a brand new global financial network that's censorship resistant, then none of this other fucking shit matters, right? Let's focus on the goods.
That's true. Put your head down, focus on what you think is most advantageous, and move from there. Let's be a little nicer to each other, myself included.
Exactly.
I'm not the nicest person in the world right now. I could be nicer.
Me too.
Are we making resolutions right now for 2019?
No, we're not. I'm not going to be that much nicer, but it's be aware of it.
Be aware. Also, be aware, are these Bitmain layoffs officially confirmed?
I think so.
Yeah, laying off up to 50% of staff. I think even more. I think somebody said 85% of staff.
Yeah, so this time last year, Bitmain was like
the boogeyman of Bitcoin.
Exactly, and now they're struggling to get by.
The boogeyman has been reduced to a mouse. They took big risk, bet big on Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah, they overextended themselves.
Yeah, the Icarus story of Bitcoin's early phase, I would argue, early era.
They had really good timing, and for their strategy of going like super leveraged all the time. And we're able to get big really quickly. And then finally, you know, we had a big bear market and they just made the wrong bets. And it just came back. I think it's great. It's great for Bitcoin. It's great for the industry.
Maybe that's like a good heuristic. Be more conservative during bull runs and more aggressive at the lows of the bear market.
Yeah, it's just a good strategy for life.
Yeah.
That's like a bold prediction I'll make. Is that I think Bitmain will be. Bitmain was like the last greatest mining centralization threat from a manufacturer point of view.
I like that prediction. We shall see how it plays out. I believe that Bitcoin mining, manufacturing, and the actual act of doing it is getting more decentralized day by day, month by month.
On that note, GMO went out of business.
Well, they took some big bets too.
Yeah, they came in this year. They're a Japanese tech company that's huge already. They're like a behemoth. Mm-hmm. And they swung and missed, and they're out of the Bitcoin mining game again.
They wasted like,
I have the link there.
I think they wasted like 800 million, close to $1 billion.
Well, they were mining as well,
yeah,
with their own machines. So they made machines, and the machines weren't competitive with other mining machines. And then on top of that, they were mining with them. So when the prices fell, everything just
Yeah, they got screwed.
And they're not hodlers, so they just fucking cut and run.
So GMO, well, that's, a, I mean, another caution. Like, if you're going to get into the mining business in particular, you better know what you're doing. Have all your ducks in a row and make sure you're getting a good energy cost. And
yeah, they got swept in by the bull run.
Yeah. Staying on layoffs, Consensus is having layoffs as well.
Did we talk about that last week?
I don't think so, did we?
I think it came out afterwards.
Yeah. Consensus is...
Joe Lubin's company.
Joe Lubin's company. Consensus is the notorious sort of venture capital arm of the Ethereum ecosystem, if you will. As many as 60 to 50% of the company's employees could be let go. That's coming from TheVerge.com. Yeah, a lot of people...
this is part of why I brought up the saltiness, because yeah, people were being kind of dicks about this. You know, this is what we all expected. We all expected that Consensus was overextending themselves. We've said it a million times throughout the bull run, right? You don't have to keep repeating it after it happened. You know, we were right.
Or do you? Do you have to sort of cement it in people's minds, like, hey.
You could say it once, maybe twice, right? But it was, like, pounding.
Yeah. I don't know if... I don't even think I touched on that in the bent. I tried to stay away from it. But, yeah, that's happening, and that just... Yeah, sorry for all those people who are now looking for jobs post-Consensus. But that is...
I mean, it sounds like they saw it coming.
Yeah, they... probably saw it coming, but like as a sign at where we are in the phase of this bear market and getting closer to capitulation, this is like sort of the sign that people have called out in general or in mass. Like Joe Weisenthal, when he came on Tales from the Crypt, said like, you'll know we've hit capitulation when there's mass layoffs at Consensus, I think he said specifically. So maybe we're getting closer to a bottom. Who knows? That may be a sign.
I mean, like, Consensus is the Ethereum juggernaut, right? It's Lubin's, like, personal army. They have
invested all these in Fura, different... MetaMask.
Fura's the big one, right? MetaMask. And Fura runs basically the majority of the Ethereum nodes, runs the network. We saw some of the stories that came out were crazy. Like, he had, like, a chief anarchy officer that just was, like, his job is to just... like, fuck with the organization or something.
What an ironic
They had no organization. They were completely overextended. And when it all came back crashing down, you know, I don't know. It's hard to have that much sympathy.
Yeah.
It's the natural course of events.
Yeah. Back to more technical stuff. Bitcoin hash rate has sort of stabled. I think the hash rate's actually rising again a little bit after hitting a floor after four consecutive downward difficulty adjustments. It's amazing because people are freaking out about the mining death spiral, yet Bitcoin's hash rate over the course of the year has doubled from 19 to 38 exahash, I believe.
Yeah, we're at right now, our hash rate is about where we were 5 months ago.
Yeah.
Whoa. That
and that, no, and it's actually, it's important that we have these downward difficulty adjustments and the hash rates sort of level off and adjust to the demand of the network to basically prove a long term, hey, this actually works. Like the design of the network works. And that gives me more certainty as a Bitcoin holder. It's like, hey, I know the underlying mechanisms that keep my money secure are working. So,
yeah, it's really nice to see the hash go back up, you know, as the difficulty drops down, price comes up a little bit, profitability increases, and then hash comes back online.
Yeah.
It's kind of beautiful.
Yeah. And then we're having hash rate level out, and then we're getting volume back. So highest volume in 7 months around this time of year.
Highest volume ever for Tether.
Oh, for Tether. Really? Yeah.
Highest single day of volume for Tether was this week, and we've also had the biggest week of trading volume in 7 months for both Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Yeah. So it seems, who knows if that's like late end of year tax selling to write off a loss. Maybe that could be it. Who knows? That's another narrative that's been floating around out there. But regardless, network activity, hash rate is leveling off. Network activity is starting to peak again. Who knows whether it's due to end of year factors or whatever, but it's good to see.
I wonder, like, the government's going to be such, like, you think they're going to take your tax loss write-off for, they're going to be, now that we're going to see, they were, like, so quick to take everyone's tax money during the bull run, but after this year, when everyone's going to be writing off these, like, they're all of a sudden going to be like, well, we can't verify it, how do we, the exchange isn't giving us the proper information or the proper reporting requirements and stuff. I bet that's what we see.
Prediction for 2019. We will see. Who knows? Last topic you have on here, Vinny and Civic. Our boy Arjun Balaji wrote a scathing critique. Or not a critique. He just basically...
It was a critique.
Yeah, a critique and a detail of Civic, the project, and their decision to neg the use of their token.
To neg it? What do you mean?
They basically have admitted that their token is worthless, but are still using it.
Oh, yeah. You don't need to use the token.
Yeah.
The token was, like, bolted on after the fact. And now they're adding, like, some kind of staking element to try and give it value.
Yeah, exactly. So go check out Arjun's piece. It was written in the block last week. Yeah, and they're claiming partnerships with all these people, and they partnered with DentaCoin. Which is
the DentaCoin partnership really pissed me off.
Yeah.
And Vinny said it was an endorsement. I'm like, Vinny, it's an endorsement. Like, yes. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They literally put, Vinny's face is on the press release saying, so happy to have a great project like DentaCoin working with Civic.
DentaCoin is a project for dentists to, like, what?
How does it still exist?
I don't know. But Civic's partnered with it, so it must be legitimate.
It's like one of my favorite shit coins, though, DentaCoin. There's something specially absurd about it. It also has, like, a huge coin count. So, like, it looks like it's cheap, but it's, like, number 11 on CoinMarketCap or something ridiculous.
What if dentists are going crazy over DentaCoin? What if, like, at the dentist conference around the country and around the world, people are raving about the future of a DentaCoin-driven dental industry?
Definitely the worst timeline, right, is that you need to go buy some DentaCoin to go to the dentist.
Right? Oh. If the dentist experience wasn't miserable enough, try buying a token and interacting with that service with it. It seems like it would just be an added layer of misery.
But anyway, Vinny's a fucking hypocrite, and he, like, always sits on his high horse. Like, I warned you guys about the bubble, because, like, he famously, like, called the top at 1,200 2 years ago, and then said afterwards, he's like, I didn't want this bubble to happen. It would have been so bad. But he just made a shit ton of money off the Civic ICO. It's a completely worthless token. And it's just really nice to see Arjun lay down all the facts about that.
Yeah. And I'm going to call him out. Vinny's a scammer. I said it, freaks. Vinny is a scammer. That's all we got on the list today.
The Bitcoin Oracle.
Fuck that. What else is going on? So we have going on here.
Oh, I met one of our listeners yesterday, Dergigi.
Shout out Dergigi.
That's at DERGIGI on Twitter.
Yeah, he actually just wrote a good piece on.
Yeah, we talked about that piece. That was great.
Yeah,
we should plug that in the show notes.
Yeah, like the philosophy behind Bitcoin and how he came to understand it and the journey he's gone on. Shout out to Gigi. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, really chill dude.
Yeah.
We had a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to the pod.
And he gave us this this interesting, to say the least, Austrian liquor.
It's a spice from Stroh 160. It's 160 proof, 80% alcohol by volume. I think their Gigi might be trying to kill us.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this shit could kill a horse.
I definitely want to get some advice on how much to drink before we dive into this.
But we appreciate it nonetheless.
Appreciate it very much.
We appreciate all of our donated.
It's very low
liquor.
Time preference because you know we're only going to have like a little bit at a time, so it's going to
This is going to last seasons upon seasons, not just one episode.
So I hope you freaks are enjoying the holiday season. I hope you've had a great 2018. Thank you guys for listening. This is the last.
Oh, it's the last episode of 2018.
Yeah, last episode of Tales from the Crypt Network.
This was a great year. This is a fantastic year.
Yeah.
How long have we been recording?
Since September, I believe.
Time flies.
Looking
forward to the year ahead.
I think I've grown personally this year. It's been felt like a productive year looking back. I feel like adding you to the network has been a powerful move. I think people are liking it. Thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. And we don't have any big plans for 2019. We're just going to keep doing this. And
we have huge plans for 2019. Well, we're going to start off 2019. I'm going to have to spend a shit ton of money on you and Murad's dinner. And then we're gonna ride Bitcoin to the moon.
Yes. And actually, for any of you freaks that are in and around New York City on January 3rd, Iterative Capital is hosting basically a 10th anniversary party for the Genesis block, the beginning of Bitcoin. And there will be Matt and I will actually be recording a live episode of the Rabbit Hole Recap for the guest at the event. We'll post it later that night as well.
We are going to be able to post it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And actually, before we record our episode, the CoinPod boys are going to be doing their thing as well. So we'll be following them. And yeah, so January 3rd at Rise VC, we'll put a link to the Eventbrite page. If any of you New York freaks are out there.
$10 per person.
Yeah, it's $10.
Nice and cheap.
And it'll be a lot of quality Bitcoiners there.
They don't accept Bitcoin, right?
I don't think Eventbrite does. You're going to have to use your dirty fiat for this.
That's a shame.
Yeah. So I'd love to see you there.
You just dropped your pod with Pete McCormick.
Yeah, Peter That's McCormick from What Bitcoin Did had me on his podcast. It was a very lovely time. It's interesting being on the other side of the interview. That's something I need to practice. I was happy to get a rep in with Peter. I definitely need to refine some of my arguments, I would argue.
I really enjoyed it. I actually listened to the majority of it today. It was very good. And I really enjoyed your headshot that he put up, the headshot of you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm actually going to go on with Pete soon, too. And I hope he has fun with my blurry Avi.
so now you freaks know what I look like. That's all we got for this week.
It's a really stunning photo. It's a great photo, Marty.
Yeah. Thank you. Peace and love, freaks. Well, I hope you freaks enjoyed that episode of Rabbit Hole Recap. We covered a lot. Thank you for rounding out the year with us. We really appreciate it. And another shout out to this week's sponsor, BlockFi. BlockFi is the leading crypto to USD lender in the US with services in over 45 states, but you freaks already know that. They let crypto investors use their Bitcoin, Ether, or Litecoin for things like buying a house, paying off credit card debt, or even buying that Lambo you've been saving up for. I would save up for something else, but if you want to buy a Lambo, BlockFi can help you there. Visit BlockFi.com/TalesFromTheCrypt to learn more about using crypto without having to sell. Special deal for you freaks, you know it already, $25 of crypto collateral added to loans below $10,000 and $50 of crypto collateral added to loans of greater than $10,000. Excuse me. Shout out to BlockFi. Go to BlockFi.com/TalesFromTheCrypt. Peace and love.